Hello. It's been that long since we've done a podcast. I've forgotten whether I speak before the opening titles or not. My name is Christian Corley, and with me are Brian Terranova and James McLean, who for once are out of alphabetical order. You're listening to the Casterbus podcast, and welcome to you, dear listener. I hope you are well, doing okay. I've made a few hints over the past few days that we might be doing a podcast, and this is it. Why now? Why would we be doing a Doctor Who podcast now, today? Why? Guys, what? Help me out. What are we doing?
We're doing a podcast.
Yeah, why? Why did we choose now?
I assume there's some news, perhaps, that we're talking about.
Yeah, that could be it.
Could be some news, maybe new toys coming out or something.
We're not children, Christian. It's not some sort of teaching school thing, what they do. Awkward silence between the two people. So what are we doing today? It's rhetorical, sir, because, we're in your class. It's English. So obviously, we're doing English today. So why are you asking?
It's
trying to elicit
English.
Response through artificial means.
Yes. Yes.
The other thing that you have to remember, too, is anybody who clicks on this podcast, it will undoubtedly have a name, which will likely reveal what we're talking about today.
That's true. Yeah, that's true. That's kind of, obviously, James's role in the podcast with a K is basically to deconstruct everything. And he's just reminded
us. I still don't know the title. Is it definitely Podcast with a K? Because when I do these, I'm never sure. I don't even know what the title is, let alone what the subject line is.
Well, that's fine, because we're talking about Doctor Who and we don't know the Doctor's name, do we? So, awkward silence. So,
well,
yes.
We do. It's the Doctor, isn't it?
Yes. Or is it? Oh, yes, it is.
Your name's Christian Corley. You've got a middle name. I don't know your name, because I don't know your middle name.
Mm.
You're Christian, so I know your name. You kind of go, but you don't know my name. It's like, well, I do, because we've got this contract between the two of us where if I say Christian, you respond, and that's the acknowledged and respected mode. We don't need to know your middle name. You see what I mean here?
Yes. We are in grave danger of slipping into a Fry and Laurie discussion on linguistics.
I am feeling resistant to command and authority today.
And that's, most people who recognize me as an authority figure are 10 and under, but that's reassuring to know. So, yes, we are here to talk about the big thing that's happened in the world of Doctor Who. And Chris Chibnall, hooray! And, in fact, hang on, Chris Chibnall and Jodie Whittaker are to leave Doctor Who in a trio of specials. Now, you may find that's a little unkind. A few of you who have listened to this show for a long time may recall a discussion between myself and my now 10-year-old son, who then was it 2017 when Jodie was announced? So he would have been six, in that neck of the woods. And he was really, really pleased and interested at the idea of the Doctor becoming a female incarnation. However, in the past few months, he's just sat watching Doctor Who on iPlayer, particularly during lockdown, and got a bit fed up with a lot of it and started watching Matt Smith and Peter Capaldi. So that's not good, is it? Really?
I'm sorry, is this another teacher's rhetorical question?
It's not, though, is it?
No, sir, this is not good.
It isn't good. This is, at very best, a kid's show. At worst, a kid's show. At best, a family show. And it's not attracting the children. Chris Chibnall says, Jodie and I made a three-series and out pact with each other at the start of this once-in-a-lifetime blast. So now our shift is done, and we're handing back the TARDIS keys. I wish our successors as much fun as we've had. They're in for a treat. Yes, it was 2017 when they began filming. So it was 2017 during the Wimbledon final, I think it was, that Jodie Whittaker's casting was unveiled in that famous scene of picking up a TARDIS key off a sundial or a birdbath, whatever it was. And for a lot of people, this is sad news. For a lot of people, this is news that they've kind of been waiting for. It's weird, isn't it? Because it's a big thing that has kind of been expected, but it's kind of bittersweet. It's bittersweet, isn't it?
Yeah, in what way?
In the way that any of them are bittersweet, that some people are happy about it, other people are sad about it. And, yeah. I mean, I'm, I've, I've, I'm, I'm edging towards relief, I think. But I mean, it's not really about me, is it? Because there's three of us. So I'm interested to see, because we haven't talked for a long time. And we've done a couple of podcasts in between. We did one little podcast with some of us. But the last time we did like a podcast with all of us was, I think, it was at the beginning of the year. So we haven't, dear listener. Brian James and I, we don't communicate daily. We probably communicate monthly at best. And so I'm not entirely, not even slightly au fait with what James or Brian feel about this particular announcement. So go first, Brian Terranova.
Well, I will just say, for a starter, as one of the resident prop guys on this particular podcast, that the thought of them handing back the TARDIS keys is the bittersweet part for me, because they haven't even bothered to show a TARDIS key in the series yet outside of that trailer, which is definitely not canon because it's Jodie not in her outfit and so on. I mean, count it however you like, I guess. But I'm just a little bitter about that. I'd like them to show it. But in all seriousness, we've talked about this before for me on the show. I haven't really been overly enamored with the show since Matt Smith took over and Stephen Moffat took over, kind of thing. Like, there's been episodes in there that were good and many that that failed to captivate me. So I don't think I've been the audience they've been trying to capture for the past few years. I don't know, like, anything prior to the Moff era seemed to largely work for me. You know, there's been misses in there, of course, but anything starting from the Moff era and on has been largely misses with a few captures. I will say I did like the most recent Dalek story. I thought that was pretty well done, and it wasn't just because Jack was back or anything like that. I actually thought that it worked rather well, and actually played off rather well from the previous Dalek episode. But the news of them leaving, I mean, it's 3 years and out. It's like, yeah, that's the standard, you know. It seems to be, you know, you get one or two people who break the standard, but that's the standard, and they both are leaving together. My honest opinion is I am more happy about Chibnall leaving than Jodi, just because the writing has just really not been working for me. And, you know, I was super thrilled when Moffat was taking over the show, and then the writing didn't work for me. So I was thrilled when he was leaving. And then when Chibnall came in, I didn't know what to expect because he didn't have a great Doctor Who track record. I think we can all agree there.
Mm.
And then now I'm just kind of like, yeah, thanks, you know, like, move on, because I don't know what to expect. I don't know. I don't even know if I'm excited for other people coming in at this point, I guess, is where I'm truly at.
Yeah, I mean, I can appreciate that. In fact, the Casterbis Twitter account, which you can follow at Casterbeyond, tweeted it. I mean, it was me. Let's didn't do it on its own. It was me. Doctor Who post 2022. This is a poll. Carry on regardless or give it a rest. 60-40 in favor of carrying on. That's not great, is it? That should be, I don't know, 80-20, 90-10, 99-1% or something. It shouldn't be 60-40. So, I mean, is that an indication of... I mean, people don't talk about Doctor Who at the water cooler. I mean, they don't now because most people don't have a water cooler. But, you know, they weren't in 2017, 18, 19. There was no water cooler conversation about Doctor Who. It was not in the way it was, you know, 15, 16 years ago through the 2010, early 2010s. You know, when it was must-watch television. These days it isn't so much, and that is concerning probably isn't the right word. It's very disappointing. James, go on, you know you want to.
I know. I gotta say that for the last 11 years you have been incredibly patient with my attempts to derail this podcast, which you put a lot of time and effort into, and you've met my attempts to sort of ruin it with dignity and with a very British attitude. I'm very impressed.
Thank you.
As to the question, well, I mean, I think I still think, and I know I've said this on this podcast before, a lot of the problems with Doctor Who comes down to exactly what you've just said, is that, you know, when it was a water cooler show, there weren't other shows really around that would attract its audiences as there are now.
Yeah.
So it's very hard for it to be a water cooler. And to be honest, even when Russell T. Davies was doing it, and I have a lot of love for what he did, and I think he did a lot of innovative things, and he made brilliant characters, and he set the show back on track.
Yes.
I still don't think the show was always particularly great. There was a lot of hangover feelings of Buffy there. It didn't feel like it was perhaps, for the BBC, it felt like it was breaking ground because the BBC hadn't done anything in ages.
Yeah.
But it still felt sometimes a little clunky, a little old hat. It didn't feel like it was ever really pushing boundaries. It was just kind of surprising us that it was doing stuff that we didn't expect Doctor Who would do. And I think now, where we have such a proliferation of shows, and especially from the States, through streaming services where we can get hold of the accessibility has increased, Doctor Who is still a little clunky. It hasn't changed. You could put a lot of Whittaker's era into 2008, and it wouldn't massively feel out of touch or out of place with what was going on then. You might think it was the story wasn't quite as good, or the Doctor wasn't as good as David Tennant or whatever, but ultimately it feels the same show. And here in 2021, when shows and the caliber is, you know, has amped, as a lot of the industry has kind of sort of even refined itself even further, and is perhaps the competitiveness of it and the change in formats and the change of how we consume it and adapting to all that. And Doctor's done none of it. And so it's still just plodding along.
Mm.
And I watch it plodding along as well. I aimfully watch each episode, and I'm fine with most of the episodes as I was then. So I think a lot of its problems, as I've said before, is simply that it just hasn't found its voice in 2021, or hasn't found its voice since 2008. And I still think in 2008, its voice was amplified because there was nothing quite like it. I mean, I've just finished watching Loki. And Loki does a lot of stuff which Doctor Who's doing, or should be doing. Oh, yeah. And it's just like, okay, that's really where Doctor Who perhaps should be.
Yeah.
Obviously not doing exactly the same thing as Loki.
Closer to Loki than possibly anything else we've talked about. Because we've had this conversation repeatedly over the years with Ripper Street, Game of Thrones as well, and now probably a couple of other things in between, and Loki. And I think Loki's the closest thing out of all those things to Doctor Who.
Definitely, almost knowingly.
Yeah.
Given the two Lokis are very much like the two genders of Doctor Who in a lot of ways, in what Tom Hiddleston sort of represents, it's kind of uncanny. But yeah, and I think that's probably one of the reasons. And it's interesting. I mean, obviously, things like the poll that we've got is going to be reflective of a certain audience of
absolutely.
So that's going to steer it. And one could argue it's very much in with the times, where everything in the world seems to be divided almost by half. Just seems to be the way these days. But I mean, last year there was that Radio Times poll, which they did like 50,000, and they got 50,000 votes. And Jodie was almost joint top, just behind David Tennant.
Mm-hmm.
So again, as Brian said, who is the show speaking for is another question. And I'm not quite sure what the answer is there. Certainly the vocal minority, the fan base, is very loud and against Chibnall and Jodie, specifically Chibnall. Again, like I said, I think probably the problem is not necessarily Chibnall, but the problem is they keep picking very safe showrunners. I mean, Chibnall, like Moffat, were people who wrote for the show back before they started producing it. And it's kind of almost like they are trying to refine or do their version of what they see as the way the shows should be done, which was the Davis way. And they both have facades of that Davis stuff, but with their own voice. So again, maybe the problem is who they're picking for showrunners is just too safe and too close to the show to do anything different.
Yeah. I mean, one of the problems might be the whole concept of a showrunner as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
you may not know this, listener. I know Brian and James do because I shared some links. J. Michael Straczynski would like to be Doctor Who showrunner. That was
you see, I gave you the segue. I gave you that on the
plan. I know you did. I know you did.
I was hoping he was going to feed off that. Yeah,
that is a bolt from the blue. I think. I mean, you know, we've talked about showrunners a lot in the past, and maybe like the whole showrunner model doesn't maybe suit Doctor Who if you're not called Russell T. Davies. This is the creator of one of the greatest science fiction series and a ton of amazing comic books and a lot more besides. I mean, the BBC obviously won't do it. Let's be honest.
No.
Unless there's a co-production involved, then there's a chance.
I would imagine they already know who they're going for.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I notice
you're not going to have a. Go ahead.
I was just going to say this is purely speculation, but I noticed that the third series of Life on Mars hasn't actually started production yet.
Yeah, could be.
Well. Anyway, sorry, Brian, what were you going to say?
No, I was just going to say that they're not likely to let a showrunner announce that they're leaving without already knowing what's coming or who's coming next, you know?
Yeah.
I will say, we could sit here and we can talk about J. Michael Straczynski's work and so on and say why he would or wouldn't be a good writer for the show, but in reality, it's just like it's everything as it always was. You know, you're either excited for that person because you know their work or you're not because you know their work, you know, or you don't have a feeling on it because you don't know their work. When I looked through his work, I'll be honest, like for me, you know, I was surprised because the name was somewhat familiar, but I didn't catalog it. But it was from one of my favorite eras of Spider-Man comics. Because John Romita Jr. is my favorite Spider-Man comic artist, mm-hmm. and he did a lot of the writing for that era. But his TV work and so on, I either didn't see it or wasn't overly impressed with what I did see of it. So it's like, you know, it's interesting that people somehow threw his name out, and I don't know how that actually came about. But
I think it came out on his Twitter thread. Someone said that Doctor Who is having a new showrunner, it'd be great for you. And he replied, I'd be quite happy doing that. I think I saw it the other day.
I'd be more looking toward, you know, what British shows are happening right now that are gaining a lot of traction that they would probably try to woo that person into doing the show, or which writer has written some of the best kind of Jodie stories that they would want to go, okay, well, maybe you'll run the show. Like who's somehow behind the scenes or on another show that's doing well that they would try to farm in. I mean, that's really what they do.
Yeah, and I think that's what they need to not do. I think exactly. At this stage, they need someone like Straczynski, who I agree with you, Brian. He might not be suited. It might not work. But it would be, you know, it would produce a reshuffle of what the show is about. But I don't know. There seems to be something very British, which I don't like in the terms of this sort of like a territorialness that if you're not British, you shouldn't be involved in Doctor Who.
That's
you
madness, isn't it? Madness.
You can't, yeah.
I mean, it was created by a Canadian.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, it's weird. I haven't really, for a while, I kind of like stepped away from things and, you know, I've kept up with the new series. I've watched the episodes. Like I said, I haven't been overly impressed. You know, one or two here were okay kind of thing, but I haven't been overly impressed. So I just kind of was like, okay, maybe I'm losing my interest. I don't know. And then I actually went back and I kind of went through my archive of all the classic series maybe a month or two ago. And I found myself, I watched the entire Tom Baker, Peter Davison, Patrick Troughton eras, and then I watched like various stories from John Pertwee and even Sylvester McCoy and a little bit of Hartnell, and I was just loving it. I was loving every minute of what I was watching, and what I realized was that I didn't lose my love for the show. I just kind of don't think the show is what I love anymore, and I'm thinking that like the show, you talk about you know, Russell coming in and making it relevant for today and so on, which he absolutely did. He made it for a more mass audience, but there were still enough notes in the show for what we grew up with to make it kind of still be an extension of the show that we love.
Yeah.
And I think that's what it's missing. And I think that's what I would love to see come back, you know, a TV show about, you know, this mad space traveler who picks up some humans, you know, makes friends with them. And then they just go around and fix problems like alien invasions and things like that. And I miss those days. They focus too much on other elements that have been done to death. That we don't, half the time we don't care about, or half the time we're making fun of, because, you know, and we shouldn't be, because there's a character in Jodie's era that has a real life condition, or, you know, I forget what medical diagnosis he has, but that we sit there and we make fun of because they never use it. They talk about it once or twice, and then they don't focus, they don't have him developing or growing in any way in the story. And it's like, if you're going to do something like that, use it.
Dyspraxia, yeah.
And it's just like, you know, maybe just don't do those things. Maybe just focus on people traveling, having fun, and then realizing, oh my gosh, you know, like crap has hit the fan. Let's fix this now. And focus on telling good science fiction stories. I think that's the big thing. Like, it's a science fiction TV show. And a lot of the times the science fiction is just, you know, something that's there. It's not the focus. And I think that's what I'm kind of missing, because that's the stuff that I really enjoyed about the show.
It's kind of Ryan's kind of, I mean, it's this isn't intended to be a dig at any of the actors, more to do with the direction of the show and the writers, but he's the modern day chameleon, isn't he? He's having a shape-shifting robot in the TARDIS who can do all these things, and then just that magic talent is forgotten slash shifted into a cupboard.
And, you know, like, and we've talked about it before too, like, and this is just the current era. We can, and I agree with James, we can pick apart things in the Russell T. Davis era too. And
yeah,
I guarantee
yeah.
we can pick apart things in the classic era. You
I've
know,
got like a book of picking things apart in Russell T. D. In the Russell T. D.
Yeah.
What? Who's the Russell T. D.? The RTD era. There's an entire book by me and Brian and other people with interesting reviews in that actually do that. And yeah, because it's there are things, but yeah. At the same time, that show had an energy that maybe the modern show hasn't had since. And, you know, I love Peter Capaldi, but I think Doctor Who suffered after the 50th anniversary. It's not really found its pace again, I don't think.
But does it not have the energy? Because I was thinking, like, Brian was saying about watching the classic show. And if you, again, I know we've said this before, but if you take, say, from Hartnell to Baker, you've got 15 years. Up to the end of Baker, you've got 15 years. And the variety in the show style within that period is monumental. I mean, okay, there was a lot more episodes, but in terms of stories. But and to a degree, maybe one of the reasons it does vary is the different levels of different episode scales as well. Well, we always just have one or two parties generally. But ultimately, we've had the same thing. I still think we've had the same kind of show. Office, yeah, Moffat and Chibnall's eras have slight differences to them. But, you know, I don't think they're that massive. And I kind of feel like you're sort of watching the same thing done with a slightly different voice. It's the same. And we've said this before. I know we keep saying this, but after 11 years, you just got to get used to it. But, you know, you start off with them meeting the doctor at the beginning, but then there's a couple of episodes where they'll do the backwards and forwards in time, and they'll go to the family. Then there'll be a few in the middle. There'll be a two-parter, and then there'll be a finale thing.
Yeah.
And it's just that 13 times. And that does get kind of tiring. There's no real shift in that. And I think that eventually kills any vibrancy that should be there. And to be fair, I've got to be careful that by sort of trying to level the playing field and say, you know, Chibnall and Moffat, maybe they're not that bad. It's just, you know, Davis came first, but maybe Davis is far better than the two of them. But I think that lack of flow. And I think one of the sad things with Doctor Who, one of the things I noticed with Walking Dead, I've been watching season 10, I think it is. So it was the one that was done last year. Or was that season 11? Oh, I can't remember, but it was on Disney Plus. And they did a longer season. It was maybe 16 episodes. And then there'd be a break, then there'd be the next season, and then the pandemic hit. And they did an extra few episodes that kind of bridged because they knew there'd be a space before they'd get to the next season. I think that was the reason. So after there's, I think it's like 22 episodes in the season, so there's about another six episodes. But those episodes are, because of the pandemic, there's like 2-3 people in each episode. It's all really scaled back.
Right.
And after 16 episodes of just heavy, sequential fighting, dying, fighting, pressure, dying, pressure, fighting. And suddenly you have six episodes, which are smaller, contained character episodes. And I didn't realize when I watched them that this was the case. I hadn't really thought about it. And I was just like, oh, this is interesting. This is a change in pace. And I'm really enjoying this change in pace. We've had 16 hard, slogging episodes. And now we're going into something more flowing. And I liked it. And I kind of feel it's a shame that Doctor Who wasn't in the middle of a production and had the opportunity to have to strip itself back and try and do something different because it had to do something different. And I think that's why that Walking Dead season was quite good in the end, was because halfway, well, three quarters of the way through, it had to do something different. And that made it feel more, it energized it, because you weren't just having the same thing again. And maybe that's something which I think Straczynski probably would bring to Doctor Who, because whether people like his stuff or not, he's always been a very bold person in taking risks, and risks in the sense of challenging current conventions rather than doing things that are wacky. So I remember, like, in Babylon 5, there would be the episode where he has just an interrogation episode with just Sheridan and his torturer, essentially, for an episode, you know, and he just scaled things back.
Right.
And he does that sort of thing. And I think that's kind of what we need with Doctor Who, something which just tries to break the repetition in it and tries to show us what can, and I think by breaking repetition, you energize it. And with this next season of six, isn't it? Next season of six, which are meant to be, are they connected?
There is the intimation that they are linked, but whether or not it's an ongoing serial or it is described as a quote unquote event serial.
Well, that to me sounds like it's trying to pick up and learn from what's going on around in all the other shows and do, which is what we've said it should be doing for a while.
Yes.
So that's a good thing. That might freshen the vibe. I think at the same time, going back to your very, very original question, which I didn't really answer, yeah, I think it's probably good that Jodie and Chris go now, because I kind of feel we need to have another attempt at trying to reset and re-energize, which I don't think Chris is going to do.
No.
And a bit like a politician, once you sort of go down in the estimations of your core followers, you never really come back up again.
Sure.
And I don't think the fan base are ever going to really give him much scope after this. I think he's kind of damaged goods. And while they're not everyone who watches the show, they certainly seem to be the louder voice in terms of what you'll see on the internet and in certain aggregate sites as well for ratings and the like. So in some sense, it's quite important to have them a little on board, which they're
you
not.
Know, what's interesting, sorry to cut you off there,
no, please do.
But you talk about the fan base, and what's interesting is on Twitter, you know, the fan base is split. You have the people who love Chris and Jodie and like seem to be the defenders out there. And then you have those who just don't enjoy what's going on. And I see extremes on both sides. I see people who love it who take things a bit too far. And I see people who hate it who take things a bit too far. And then there's middle ground where people are just like, look, it's just not working for me.
Yeah.
And other people are like, hey, I actually like the show. You know, so you get both sides of the spectrum. But it's interesting how Twitter seems to be still kind of alive with it, where I was going to talk a little bit about Gallifrey Base, which of course was Gallifrey 1 or whatever it was back in the day, Christian, when Casterbris all first was born in their forums.
I remember.
And
it's a strange place to be born, isn't it?
Yeah, but you know, but the thing is, once upon a time, it was booming, and
yeah,
I still visit Gallifrey Base because there's two things that I only visit two sections on their forum, I'll be honest. One of them, it's called The Velvet Web, and the other one is all about Big Finish. The Big Finish thread still seems to be pretty booming. You've got Christopher Eccleston doing them these days. some people seem to like the fact that they're doing new Third Doctor and War Doctor plays First and Second Doctor with new actors. You know, other people are not too keen. I'm in that camp myself. But it's booming. It's active completely. The Velvet Web section used to be all about where can you get David Tennant's ties, his suits, Matt Smith's bow ties, Peter Capaldi's T-shirts, his coats, his shoes, all their shoes. It used to be super alive. And I used to pop in there very curious to see people's costumes, you know, their progress and so on. And it's been dead for so long now. Like, new threads pop up once in a while, or somebody will post something in an old thread. But it's just been absolutely dead. And I don't know if that's an indication that nobody is just really caring about what's going on with the current season, so they're not talking about any of those costumes, and we've already found everything we need to find on all the previous costumes, or if the interest level has just dropped, you know. But you want to talk about the fan base, and you want to talk about like waning interest, or people are still interested, or, you know, the show's doing okay or not okay. It's just very interesting, the certain places that you do visit online where we can kind of ignore the vocal majority, which do seem to be, you know, the loud naysayer voices on the internet anymore these days. You know, the people they hate everything. I mean, and it's not just Doctor Who; they hate everything, and you hear their voice all the time. But it's an area like this that speaks more volumes to me, because it wasn't a negative zone; it was a very positive zone, and it's just an absolute wasteland now. And it's sad, you know, like especially through this pandemic, you would think that people would be diving into their hobbies very heavily and popping things in here and trying to escape in it and so on, but it's just dead.
That's weird. Interestingly enough, I was watching an old episode of Midsummer Murders the other day, which had Tim Trelawer in it as a policeman.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah, that's quite a fascinating thing. I mean, I have noticed a lot of communities have kind of been shifting, some to Twitter, others into sort of Instagram groups and WhatsApp groups and things like that. Oh, that was professional, wasn't it? Hitting the microphone. Instagram pages and WhatsApp groups and things. So maybe there's something in that. But for a forum to lose a lot of traffic into like an established section like that, that is quite... I guess at the same time, there haven't been an awful lot of conventions. So maybe there has not been an awful lot of traffic of people wanting to cosplay so much in public, but even so, yeah.
And it could be demographics as well, that different generations that it's appealing to might be interested in costumes, but may approach, as you say, their communities in different ways. Or it could be that, I mean, I think there's going to be a wane, because as I say, the show's in its newest incarnation 15 years old. You know, that's a long time. And we can't pretend that it's no longer up atop of its, you know, in terms of visibility. That said, when I watch a lot of other stuff, I'll be watching videos on, I don't know, like we said, Loki, maybe on people commenting on episodes of other shows. In terms of the sort of sci-fi niche, Doctor Who still comes up a lot. You know, people, especially in American culture, since it's come back in 2005, it doesn't seem to have waned in the amount of how embedded it is in those sort of communities, in that world. So maybe that people aren't so fixated on it, but it hasn't been forgotten, which is interesting. Well, for me, it kind of has, because I don't tend to think about it much, because I'm watching other shows, which again is why I think saturation is a big thing.
Yeah.
And that can also draw people out of communities, because they can now become far easily hooked into another show's cosplay. So that could be another factor. They may be going to sort of more general spaces where they can talk about a variety of shows because they've got interest. I don't know. I think it's interesting, as Brian says. I think the problem is that it's such a big macro thing to be talking about. It's very hard to be able to really decide, work out what's going on and how that affects the show. It's
absolutely. We have no idea. We can only speculate on it, and just as everyone else can. Here's an interesting thing: Doctor Who trended on Twitter probably for the first time in a very long time. Actually, for the first time since the beginning of the month, because for some reason it was trending at the beginning of the month after Jodie Whittaker announced the departure of therein. When the news was revealed, Jodie trended with 13,000 tweets an hour, rising to an incredible 20,000 tweets. Do you know, I very rarely tweet about Doctor Who or talk about Doctor Who when I bother to tweet. It's very odd. Although, I mean, then again, at the same time, were I to, it would immediately get tweeted or retweeted by the Castorbis account. So, again, that's me retweeting myself. I don't want to, like, pretend that there's, like, someone looking after the Castorbis account or that it's automated in some way. No, it's just me clicking buttons. But it is quite interesting that also Chris Chibnall trended as well. We're going to be talking about Chris Chibnall for many years to come, I think, because I don't see, aside from a small passage of episodes in the last run of Doctor Who, I think that a lot of it just feels flat to me, and I think we're going to be looking back at anything that was flat, and that wasn't Doctor Who's best period, and what were they thinking? And I think the BBC probably were out of ideas after Moffat left, announced he was leaving finally, because, you know, they kept kept him on for a long time. There's lots of things going on behind the scenes with the production and so forth, and changing ideas. And, you know, they kept it going with the idea of the Doctor with Bill, which was one of those times when Moffat was supposed to have gone at the end of the series before that. As you know, they kept it going, and, you know, they kept him for an extra year, didn't they, in the end, and held off regeneration, then kept Moffat on for, you know, to prolong the show's life with the 12th Doctor. So, you know, it hasn't really, and as I said before, Doctor Who hasn't had the pace that it had prior to the 50th anniversary. Since the 50th anniversary, it's ebbed and flowed and lost not just pace within series, but, you know, it has been on TV regularly. You know, 2005, 2006, 2007, 2008, 4 years on the trot, it aired in March or April for 13 weeks.
Yeah.
And then since 2011, it hasn't done that, and it hasn't aired regularly. There's been reasons for that, but at the same time, it's never really regained the momentum that it had back then. Now, in some ways, that might be a good thing, because it could have been seen to be overwhelming at the time. It certainly was if you were running a Doctor Who website and podcast. But Doctor Who doesn't have that momentum. That momentum is required to keep a show to, like, front and center. And, you know, I mean, obviously, you've got the risk of people having burnout beyond, you know, plebby website editors. You know, the people that are actually making the show, they're going to get burnt out, and they're going to want to go and do different things and not get burnt out, and, you know, stretch themselves in different ways and work on different shows. And that's absolutely fine, because we've got a great industry in the UK that brings people in all the time. But it does feel like it has been a bit of a stop, start, staccato. It's going. Oh, no, it's off again for 18 months. And it just, you just lose it, don't you?
But at the same time, I mean, I think if you look back at various eras, the criticisms and, you know, I mean, obviously there's some eras which have had high points which probably won't ever be disputed. But, I mean, I think I would classify Whittaker and certainly Chibnall, maybe I would classify Chibnall as a JNT in the sense that I think he will always have criticism, but there will also be acknowledgement. There was some good stuff done. I mean, I'm just looking through the episodes, and, you know, Demons of Punjab, I thought was brilliant. Rosa, I thought was pretty good. Takes You Away, I think, was one I liked. You know, Kablam was quite enjoyable. Mm-hmm. Spyfall was quite enjoyable. I thought Fugitive of the Jadoon had some very smart and risky things going on. The Timeless Children will always be one I think people will argue over, you know, and will, and in that sense, I think he would have perhaps through that episode alone given his era a certain amount of controversy that will keep it remembered. And obviously there's the one, the Dalek one that Brian liked, which I thought was all right.
Yep.
The Haunting of Villa Diodati was quite good.
I think that was probably the best, we didn't to like. Be honest.
Orphan. Yeah, you like that. Orphan 55 was pretty drab. I didn't like that. Can You Hear Me didn't work very well. The Woman Fell to Earth was a bit hit and miss. You know, Arachnids in the UK I didn't like. There's a mixture, and I think, say Davison and certainly Colin Baker's era, but Davison's especially, I look back at fondly, but when I actually go through the episodes, a lot of them were actually quite bland. They weren't that great, but I still have quite an affection for the era. So I think time will give it an affection that it probably doesn't have now, in the same way that I can watch Matt Smith stuff now and actually enjoy them more than I probably did at the time.
Yeah.
And how people don't loathe Sylvester McCoy in the same way as they did at the time. You know, people now go, you've got to watch Ghostlight, you know, it was amazing. It's like, well, I remember at the time, you know, Doc Two Monthly, and the critics were not happy with it because they didn't think it made sense. They thought it was just confuddled rubbish. So, you know, time does have a factor in this.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
See if it goes.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And it kind of leads on to another thing that I wanted to talk about, which was the only, in my opinion, because there's, and I'm allowed to have it because it's kind of this podcast, but I do feel that Jodie's personality and character are really the only things that hold this show together at the moment. If you know, with a different actor, it could be very different. With a different actor, it could be a lot worse. And as with McCoy and Baker in particular, not necessarily limited to them, that they're outliers, I suppose, in terms of audience and when they landed in being in Doctor Who and the things that were going on around it. And you can go back and you can watch those shows and some of Davison's shows as well. And their performances are what are holding things together. You know, we're not mentioning Tom Baker. Tom Baker had a lot of shit. And in the hands of a lesser actor, same with Peter Capaldi, in the hands of a lesser actor, those shows would have been completely unwatchable. And, you know, those great actors. Jodie Whittaker manages, I think, to do the same thing with her material. She's going to keep them watchable for years to come, whilst those of us who are very critical Doctor Who fans and, you know, thinking, my God, why are people watching this? You know, when you sat there watching it and you're picking it all apart in your head and thinking how terrible it is, and the person next to you is, that's got this, isn't it?
I think what you say is a really good point, because if you imagine a Graham Williams era with a lesser doctor, I know old Cabana with falling off his off his roof garden,
falling off his pinball machine.
Yes, that's better. But yeah, he without him, that I think that season, those seasons would not really work as well. They would probably look very frail and perhaps a little ugly. And a little, you start getting those sort of criticisms. I think they're held together. And Gray and Gareth, I do think a lot of them work. And I think a lot of them work because of the way that Baker plays it.
Yeah.
And the way he holds it together when there's those moments where they're starting not to work, he's there to tie it together. And there are moments where they are just great, and that's fine. But I think, as you say, that lead actor being able to tie and hold it together kind of seems to be important to Doctor Who in a way where it shouldn't. And the show should be able to be great no matter who's in the lead, and it sometimes isn't. I think that's probably a topic in itself. But yeah, I think that's true. At the same time, I think one of the biggest problems with Jodie's era, as I've said this before, is that they're still busy, too busy trying to template the Doctor on her, rather than let her just be the very charming actress she seems to be in as a person, and let that ebb in a little more. And you see it occasionally, but then you see these lines, these Tom Bakery lines thrown in, which just don't vibe. And I've seen it do that with other doctors as well. So it's not just her. And it's just like, they saw it with Capaldi. They would do it with Capaldi. So back off, let him do his thing.
Yeah.
Stop trying to make him eccentric. He's Peter Capaldi. He's fairly eccentric, mate. You know, just let him do his thing. And there's that sort of feeling. And again, McCoy, you know, that first season of McCoy, where they didn't know what to do with him. And he was sort of like, they were obviously templating a bit of Troughton and obviously the template of Baker as well.
Yeah.
And it just didn't work with him. And he found his own pace and speed. And Capaldi seemed to be getting that in his last season. And yeah, I think they need to just stop doing that. Just you get a personality in. You're obviously auditioning or not auditioning somebody. You're casting on the basis of a personality of an actor. Let the actor do it. Let Jodie do her work. And yeah, I think that's maybe something they should take forward. Just back off. You can have a doctor which is sardonic or gentle or doesn't, you know, do all the crazy things. I mean, we had William Hartnell, you know, you don't have to have it the way. Do we have John Pertwee? Who, again, very different.
Yeah, all completely different.
You've got another angle as well, too, which is you both talked about how, you know, Tom Baker or an actor of caliber can save sort of a mediocre story or something like that, or going back and looking fondly at, say, the Peter Davison era or even the Sylvester McCoy era. And I agree with the points you've made. I mean, even doing a rewatch on my own, I realized out of the Sylvester McCoy era, I watch, you know, basically half his era with fondness and the other half is kind of what were they thinking kind of thing. And it's quite literally a half divide is what I realized with his era for me. And that got me thinking while you both were talking here, rather than just an actor of caliber, you know, doing something with a script that's there or people, you know, remembering an era fondly because of that particular actor or so on. It's what resonates with us. Like, I'm sitting here and I'm realizing I can't watch a movie with Nicolas Cage in it because I can't stand his performance. I'm sorry, but this is going to shock some people out there because I know a lot of people who love this. I also can't think of a Coen Brothers movie that I like. You know, but there are people who love both Nicolas Cage and the Coen brothers. So could it be just a matter of that as well, that there are fans that actually the writing that Chibnall puts out is just something that's geared toward their mind, and Jody is that their actor of caliber that completely resonates with them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the same with the Matt Smith or Moffat and Russell T. Davis and Tennant or Eccleston and so on. Like, there's so, when we talk about Doctor Who, it's not like you've got a TV show like The X-Files, which just, you know, was the same actors, virtually the same writers with, you know, or the same main head writer, but the same kind of writing team, adding new people, new voices here or there. Doctor Who has so many different eras that it's almost like you can chop it up and say, while this is the same show, you know, you've got the Steven Spielberg movies, you've got the Coen Brothers movies, you know, the Quentin Tarantino movies, whatever you want to say. And maybe that's all it comes down to is just that, you know, like it's so divided in the writers, the producers and the actors that it's never going to appeal to the mass audience entirely together as a whole.
No, absolutely. Totally. I think that's true.
I quite like The Rock.
Yeah,
you know, I will say with every kind of comment there, I'm sure there is an outlier or, you know, something that breaks the rule. I'm absolutely with you there. And I'm sure if I go through, there's probably something in Coen Brothers library as well that maybe I'm missing that I did enjoy. But as a general rule, though, you know, like, hey, yeah. I like 42 and Chibnall wrote 42. You know what I mean? But it's like, it's just there. I just wonder how much of it is truly like, what's the most vocal voice out there? You know, is it really that the Chibnall and Jody era are or even the Moffat era are ones that just aren't resonating with the mass fan base? And well,
I think we've also got to take into account that we are in an unprecedented era where 40 plus people have a voice, which has never been had before, in an era where the amount of material available for them to connect to through their lives has never been as much. So I think we're seeing a lot at the moment, and the way that 40 plus Gen X are using the internet, I kind of feel a lot of this is also fact in terms of fan voices of these sort of things, because we're seeing the same sort of, you know, I follow Star Wars stuff, I follow Star Trek stuff, I'll follow Doctor Who stuff, and I will see the same sort of angry voices in all those and Ghostbusters I'm seeing in some of the trailer, new recent trailer drop, and some of the comments there. You know, leave it alone, do something new, don't ruin my childhood, this is dead. Or, you know, in Star Wars, you know, the new movies are rubbish, you know, they've destroyed my childhood, to put it nicely. I see it in Star Trek, you know, Picard, it's too dark, it was never like this, it should be like this. And it's as if we're in an age where it's so much more preparatorial, I can't say it. Stuff going on here that sort of shifts and darkens the discourse a bit that we see going on. And I'm not saying it's just 40 somethings. Obviously, these people in their 30s, I'm sure people in their 20s. But I think I'm trying to say it's not about not trying to sort of poke at a generation, just saying that people who have lived X amount of time and this stuff links back to their childhoods. So they have a special, there's a certain energy that it gives them, that their voice is going to be very loud and angry when they feel that what is happening now, it doesn't work, isn't in tandem with that. Seeing it again with the He-Man, Kevin Smith's He-Man stuff, and obviously with the She-Ra stuff before that, the set which J. Michael Straczynski had a massive part in creating. We're seeing that sort of thing again, you know, we don't need this stuff. Why are you doing it like this? This isn't my, this is my show. And it's, we've never had that before.
No, no.
And I think that is also skewering how we can try and work out, as you say, what do people want? What do the masses want? What are the masses? Who are the masses? Is masses just a really stupid term? Well,
it's interesting too, because you're talking about 40-somethings, 20-somethings, this, that, and the other, and definitely you ruined my childhood kind of thing. I've seen a lot of comments on Twitter about people going back and rewatching the Russell T. Davis era, you know, the Tennant or Eccleston era, or even the Matt Smith era, and just saying, man, I'm so nostalgic for this. I remember getting my first Sonic Screwdriver toy. You know, I was 7 years old watching these episodes. And it makes sense because, I mean, like, you know, think how long it's been now. Yep. They have their own nostalgia or nostalgic era already for themselves. So yeah. I think the voices of my childhood, air quotations there, yeah, are now spanning many generations.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it is very true. And to be honest, I don't think that I can't, at least in my opinion, I can't find an example of any kind of fandom that doesn't have so many divided voices these yeah days. Because it seems like if you're a fan of something, you're passionate to the point that you want to, you know, punch a brick wall or something like that. But it's you know, obviously watching this TV show in the 80s, we wouldn't have had the internet. A lot of these voices were probably still around. We just didn't hear them quite as clearly before.
Yeah. Yeah, to a degree. But then I think back in the 80s, you know, the merchandise, the way TV connected with children had never really connected with children in the same way as, you know, sort of early 80s onwards, where obviously the toy markets became far more focused on delivering to children. And, yeah, you know, the ability to get access to television, the amount of television, to films, was a lot cheaper. Video recorders, so you could record and redigest, and then the video boom in terms of commercial stores. So I think it changed everything. And so I think the 80s is probably the first era of people becoming becoming the twisted monsters that we are now.
When you had the fanzines as well, didn't you?
Yes. So there was a change there. And I agree with you, Brian. I don't know why I was going to call you David then. it's not even linked in any way whatsoever. But yeah, I think that's a thing there. I think there is a generation that's happening to, and it will happen to, and they will have the same responses. So it's not like saying Gen X are dicks. It's like, it's not, yeah, it's more complicated than that. It's about people's nostalgia and connections to what they're growing up and how they're seeing it being utilized, and to some degree given to other people, which I think a lot of people find very hard, you know. And I think certainly Russell T. Davis's was giving it to other people, and we saw at the time there were people who were angry about that in the same way they were angry about McGann and the Kiss. But with Jodie, obviously was a very big punch in that sort of that a lot of people found very uncomfortable. You know, because you are obviously, this a new audience that a female doctor is going to tap into. You're spreading it, you're giving it to other people. And I think there's a lot of that. There's always the worry and the tension that this is mine. Don't take it away from me because it's special to me. And how do you unpack, how do you untease that from the conversations on whether something's good or not? I don't know. Mm. All I know is that I didn't hate Jodie's era. Can't say that it blew me away.
No,
and I'm not quite sure why and whether. But I personally kind of feel it's not as bad as people say it is.
They're never as bad, absolutely, and they're never as good.
But the hyperbole in fandoms is that it is as bad, and you'll see people, you know, over the timeless children, the fury over it and the anger, and it's just like, well, you know, in a few years' time, the show will have forgotten about it, and you've hopefully forgotten about it too. You know, I didn't do anything that bad. It's not destroyed everything, no more than McGann's half human did, or, you know, the female master, and the, you know, just, I don't know. time will tell, I suppose.
It's just weird for me personally. Like, I watch an episode and, you know, for instance, I watch Loki, okay, mm-hmm. or even something like Rick and Morty these days, and I immediately go to work. And there's a buddy that I have at work who's into this sort of stuff, and we just talk about it endlessly.
Yeah.
We theorize what's going on and so on. Watch a new episode of Doctor Who, and outside of this podcast, I don't talk about it. Watch it, it's over, mm-hmm. it's done. I sit there and go, well, I watched that. I don't have this inkling to watch it again like I have done in the past. Like, I remember, you know, certainly when the new series first came about, when an episode aired, I would watch it and then almost immediately watch it again.
Yeah.
You know, much as I could, kind of thing. And I remember Stolen Earth when Tennant was, quote, regenerating.
Yeah.
You know, a buddy and I went to visit a friend in Vermont, and we drove around forever trying to find an internet connection just to try and watch the episode that we could, because, you know, we were in the middle of nowhere we're like, oh my gosh, it's airing today. And we're trying to like get a signal to watch it, kind of thing. But we had been speculating a week up to that, going, what's going to happen? Oh my gosh, do you think it's real? What's, you know, but we were just like blown away by it, taken. But now, even with the cliffhanger things that they did in this show, like, I just sit there and nothing is making me feel that same way. Now, that doesn't mean that it's not making somebody else feel that same way, but it's not hitting me that way. And it's kind of sad for me, because it's a show that, you know, I've clearly been very passionate about, and you want to continue to enjoy it. And it's just kind of odd that it's just not holding that attraction anymore.
Do you think some of that is that water cooler shows these days, not all of them, are obviously they carry, there's a lot of franchise spreading, and we're not just talking about Marvel stuff, but even things like, you know, like The Walking Dead. I said, you know, Walking Dead, Fear the Walking Dead. There's the more recent one that was on Prime. You know, a lot of shows, there's a lot of conversations of spin-offs, there's things that go in between. Kind of feel when Doctor Who is on, then Doctor Who comes off. There is no energy from the BBC or anywhere that just sort of tries to keep it alive. It sort of dies now until they're ready to announce the next series. And I'm not saying that that would keep it alive. I think there's a difference in the world. There's a difference in what engages people. But I kind of feel that there's no attempt to try and make it have meaning outside of when it's about to air. The show used to do that before, you know, streaming and saturation of media hit. This, you know, in the 2012, 2013. So why are they not doing it now? You know, I mean, Davis did some very clever, cheap things, you know, with the internet websites and the little pocket casts. We don't have anything like that. There's nothing to sort of keep the thing rolling over. It's as if no one cares about it until it comes on, and then you get the standard wash of publicity, and then it's off again. And there's no feeling of love, I think, for it by the BBC. And I think sometimes, if you don't feel as pride in it from its host, it kind of loses some of its own value. Because, you know, Disney feels like it's swanning around all its products, be it Star Wars, be it, you know, be it Marvel. And, you know, all, as I say, you know, Amazon is always over all its products as well. There's just no feeling of that. I don't feel a Doctor Who anymore. And maybe that's just me. Maybe I'm too far away from the franchise to be. But that's how I kind of see it. It's gone.
You actually bring up a good point, actually, when you brought up Amazon, something I was just going to hit on, because there was a friend of mine that I follow, at least on social media and so on, they had just posted a photo of Forbidden Planet in the UK. They went in the store and they said, like, they just have one end cap worth of Doctor Who merchandise. He said, once upon a time, it would have filled, like, multiple shelves, like, in multiple row shelves and so on. But that brings me to something I actually kind of wanted to comment on a little bit earlier, which is, you know, we talked about it's like 15, 16 years on since the new series. And sure, the original series ran for 26 years, fine. But what TV show these days lasts really realistically more than 10 years successfully, you know? I know people were following Supernatural for even longer, but I even knew people in that fan base that were like, come on, this show kind of needs to end. Like, how much longer are we going to drag this out, kind of thing? And I kind of wonder if, even though Doctor Who, which has that constantly evolving and changing format, which is supposed to allow it to grow and renew and regenerate, if you will, if it's just gotten to the point where like you said earlier in this podcast, you know, they haven't changed the format. We haven't renewed the writing in any way. And I wonder if at this point, if it can save that, or if it's a little bit beyond that right now, because most of the people that were looking for that change have already moved on. Maybe it can, but what show, you know, 10 years in Hollywood anyway, 5 years is what you hope for a show. That's when you start out a show, you're hoping that you at least get 5 years out of it. 7 years is considered a super huge success, and 10 years is an unprecedented success, you know, and that's how they gauge it in Hollywood. And the UK has always been a little bit different, because the UK could look at a show and like Life on Mars and say, 2 years is all we're going to do. That's all the show needs. And which is brilliant, because I think knowing a limitation of the storytelling, or the fact that this is the concept, this is the story, this is how far we can take it, and stopping there rather than going, well, we can bleed this for more, can't we? Which I think is just killing many things these days. I think it's a wonderful thing to know a proper stopping point, but I also think that there is only so far that you can go when following a show. You know, look at what's happening right now with all the revivals and so on. You know, Star Wars is very hit or miss. Okay, you either loved the new trilogy or you absolutely hated it, or the prequel trilogy or you absolutely hated it. You know, you've got The Mandalorian now, which seems to be largely doing well, but then they're announcing all these other TV shows that, you know, like, you know, me personally, I look at half these other TV shows they've announced and I have no interest. As a matter of fact, I only have interest in one other one that they've announced, to be quite frank. But even Star Trek, you know, I don't, you know, people want to talk about how Discovery is destroying the show or Picard destroyed the show, but I was never really that into DS9 or Voyager either, you know? And it's like, how far can you completely bleed a concept? And is that where we're at right now? Is Doctor Who just kind of aging out? Should it stop rather than try and regenerate yet again? Like, has it already kind of waned so far from the public view that trying to change it again just really isn't going to do much? Maybe give it a breather, you know? I don't know.
I suppose that sort of comes down to like, that question of who could it regenerate into that would give it the momentum and not disrupt its critical base even further, in terms of, you know, I mean, once you've got the sort of like, once you've got the female lead, the woman lead, do you, you know, well, we've said this before, if you go into another woman, does that feel right? If you went to a man, would that suddenly feel like you are raising the mistake, inverted commas? You know, is it that sort of thing? Where do you go from here, which takes the show onward without it getting trapped in its own, in the quagmire of its discourse?
I don't want to point fingers. Like, I don't want to be that guy that waggles the finger and says Chibnall, but So I don't want it to sound like this, but I think if you're going to deconstruct what's not working, and again, it comes down to pointing fingers, don't point fingers at the actors. It's the storytelling that's not working these days. Because, you know, we talk about the actors having a certain magic and that they can save scenes and so on. And let's be fair, people can talk all they want about Jodi, you know, like saying she's, you know, a wet paper bag or anything like that. She's a talented actress. She's not the reason that this show is failing. She has talent. You know, Peter Capaldi had talent, and people are still tearing him apart for some reason and saying he destroyed the show. But he's an absolutely phenomenal actor, you know, and it's like they have talent. And I'm not trying to weigh this on Moffat or Chibnall as, oh, they're bad writers. But that format, like you said before, maybe that is just the saving grace. Change the format, change the focus. Maybe focus a little bit more on the lead character rather than the companion characters and their families. Or just there's got to be some other way that they can steer this show. Maybe even too, and we've talked about this before in the past, maybe we just don't, you know, stop doing stories where the universe is ending or the world is ending, you know, and maybe do little stories where a little village in England is under fire and the doctor saves and the companion saves this little village, but the rest of the world just doesn't know. You know, it doesn't have to be earth shattering or universe shattering, or maybe it just needs to be one long story like they're trying to do with this one. But I don't want to sit there and say, you know what, the doctor must be a man again, or must be a white man again, or anything like that. I don't think that's right. I think if you get a compelling story, that's what's going to work. Look what happened with Loki. You talked about Loki, you know, basically having many Doctor Who points. You know, they have the void, you know, mm-hmm. the time variance authority, which is basically you can either say that's the time agents or the time lords, you know. And I'm forgetting all of it now, but one of my friends who did not watch Doctor Who, the guy I was talking about earlier, who we just kept talking about Loki together, he kept asking me, is this basically Doctor Who? And I was sitting there like, they're doing things differently for sure. I said, but there are absolutely a lot of elements that were in Doctor Who that I could absolutely pinpoint and say that these were either lifted from Doctor Who or they're just time travel story tropes that you're obviously going to use. But that's the thing, though, like, Loki took what is basically Doctor Who and made an absolutely compelling story out of it with compelling characters, you know, and nobody is sitting there yelling at the fact that Sylvie is a woman rather than, oh, well, that should have been another male Loki. You know, like, you're not having that debate. It works. The story works with the character as who she is. So I don't think it necessarily needs to sit there and say that the next Doctor must be this or I'm out. No, let's re-engage the storytelling. Let's find a new way to find what the audience actually wants to see being told as stories. And I think one of the criticisms of the Chibnall era with the whole political correctness message and so on, in my opinion, it's absolutely true. And it's not that they're doing political correctness messages. It's how they're doing them. Because Doctor Who has always been relevant of the times and always told proper messages and so on. I don't think Chibnall is handling how they tell them well. You know, I get that this episode you were trying to tell us a message because you're really making that message blatantly obvious.
Yeah.
Maybe it needs to be a little bit more subtle, and maybe the storytelling needs to be more unique or more twisted, more bent, more maybe a story that we have to sit there and literally actually fight to figure out where is this going. I mean, we all speculated, is it Kang? Is it Loki? You know what I mean? Like, I have not had anything like that in Doctor Who for a long time.
Long time, yeah. It's Doctor Who used to be allegorical, and now it's kind of in your facical. So, when it comes to that sort of thing, I think one of the things you mentioned that was interesting regarding the Chibnall or Whitaker or whatever, but in a kind of a popular consciousness sort of a way, the person that's associated with the show most is the lead actor, and then maybe the companions, and then the lead writer. And in a kind of tabloidese, kind of popular discourse sort of a way, it will be Jodie Whittaker linked to an era of Doctor Who written by the bloke from Broadchurch that hasn't done as well as the kind of bombastic David Tennant, Russell T Davies era of Doctor Who. And that's what that's the popular consciousness divide right there. So going forward, they need to be picking someone who has the charm and liveliness of whomever, obviously has to be absolutely right for the part, but they need to be going for that same sort of energy and excitement and dynamic and power and passion and pace to the show if they want it to get the extra legs that it clearly needs. I've just remembered, I had a conversation with someone not so long ago who was reporting to me a second conversation that he'd had, and there was definitely talk of co-production. So it might be that, you know, we're talking about this now. It might be Doctor Who comes to, not the end of its run, but it comes to a point with these specials that are coming along, the last one of these specials, that is maybe a... We talk about Doctor Who a lot with jumping on points. There might be a jumping off point. It might be a kind of a potential end for the show prior to moving to co-production and some sort of large sort of maybe a complete reboot, but certainly sort of like a notable one on the horizon.
I think also, I mean, this is taken from the BBC press office. So obviously there's a slant on this.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, I'm just quoting from them, you know, the under Chibnall, they got two BAFTA must-see moment nominations. multiple national television award, BAFTA, TV Choice, Screen Nation, Hugo Satin, Critics' Choice nominations, awarded Visionary Awards, TV Show of the Year, the Canadian Rocky Award from the Banff Television Festival. They've had Radio Times, they've been voted by readers as best science fiction show. They've had, you know, they've had a lot. I'm not going to go through them all. And again, as I say, this is obviously there to pitch a certain position to press.
Yeah, yeah.
But my point being is that I think we've still got to be careful that there is a base out there. I think it does have its reception where it is enjoyed. I still think its big problem is as I've said, is that the big boys are in town now. I mean, Disney especially. And I kind of wonder whether an approach forward for Doctor Who would be to get on that sort of gravy train of anticipation, which it seems to have lost, because we're used to now a new Doctor, and we're just like, well, we'll see. But it's like, if you did I know this isn't the Copo that we're talking about, but if it was like a sort of trans-franchise thing, and there was a story which actually linked with another franchise, we'd say a Disney franchise with, you know, Doctor Who appearing in a Marvel story, you know, something like that.
Which has happened in the 1990s in the comics.
In what, are we talking in the comics?
Yeah, in the comics, yeah.
Yes, in the comics, yes. That sort of thing. So, yeah, it isn't unprecedented. Are you talking largely through Death's Head? And to be fair, Doctor Who's appeared in Star Trek comics as well.
Yeah.
They've done crossovers there.
Yep.
But the point being is, does it need that sort of energy, that sort of global energy or something really unusual to give it the kick it needs, regardless of who the Doctor is? I kind of wonder whether that's sort of what it needs as well. I don't know. I don't envy whoever does take over the mantle, because I just don't get the feeling that the BBC is still really behind the show, not in the way that it needs. It needs a co-production to give it some freedom, I think, to be able to do its own thing.
I think other than a sort of maybe a three-year period when Lorraine Heggersey was at the BBC, I really don't think the BBC, again, knows what Doctor Who is. It's back to that it was all through the late 70s, 1980s. They don't know what Doctor Who is. They don't know what to do with it.
But then if you're outside of watching the BBC traditional channels, anything on the BBC is actually kind of hard to work out what's happening, because you just don't see it, because there's just so much content. And of course, the algorithms for that content is all aimed at you. So things just fall down the wayside. Good quality shows. So again, the idea of a co-production, something which pulls it out from the BBC and perhaps gives it a space elsewhere, to me seems to be the way that it finds life. Because at the moment, I still kind of feel like it's just getting lost in the way that whatever television is now is going. And it's just not got the space, the publicity, or the confidence behind it to be able to let it do something that would actually make it shine again. And I think it could shine. I really do. I think it needs to change in how it's done, in the way the stories are done, how the Doctor's done as well. I mean, I was thinking of other characters, because the Doctor doesn't have to be eccentric. The Doctor just has to be a show stealer, a scene stealer.
Yes.
That is what the Doctor is. So you take House from House MD, or you take Mulder from The X-Files. I could see the Doctor being like a Mulder, who isn't very... who isn't wacky and crazy, but is eccentric and show and scene stealing in a different way.
Yeah.
You don't have to scene steal in the same way as Tom Baker and Patrick Troughton. You know, Englishness is not just about being eccentric Victorian white men. It's about something else.
I'll tell you too, with that, just to play off exactly what you said there, Paul McGann is a classic example of that, as is John Hurt.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Rick Mayall, although obviously that's not a great example.
Yeah. Yes, I mean, it is. But I mean, Paul McGann's a good example, because if we take away the movie performance where there were some Doctor Who-y lines in there, and you go into his Big Finish performance, you've got somebody who very clearly is just being very much a Paul McGann, and it works.
Yeah. He has eccentricities in the Big Finish plays. They give him silly moments or very, very doctorish moments, but he still plays. He doesn't play the character over the top or silly or crazy. He's very straight and reserved. And it's a beautiful performance. And I agree with you 100%. You don't need the Doctor to be wacky bouncing off the wall.
No.
They just need to be able to steal the scene.
Yeah.
That is what the Doctor's about.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I wouldn't disagree with that. We're coming towards the end of this week's podcast with a K, whatever it's called. It's probably worth mentioning, because we've talked about David Tennant quite a bit in this podcast, which has mostly been about Jodie Whittaker. There is a new version of Doctor Who, The Edge of Time, which was a VR game. It's now coming out as Doctor Who, The Edge of Reality, and it has the voices of both Jodie Whittaker and David Tennant in it. It's a new video game for pretty much every platform that you can think of, unless, like me, you play retro gaming platforms, in which case, you're shit out of luck. And that's coming along in September from Mace Theory Games. I didn't get the chance to play the VR thing because I don't really believe in VR. I mean, I know it exists. It's not that kind of belief thing. Not a fan of it. That whole spatial thing, it doesn't work for me personally. So it's quite exciting that it's now coming out in a more linear gaming style. So I'll be checking that out. Guys, do we have anything to add to quite an extensive conversation, really? Are we at the end of this discussion on this occasion, do you think?
I think the other thing that they could do, which again is a sign the BBC just doesn't seem to be on top of this, and in a way that JNT, well, no, was he? No, probably not. He was actually antithesis of it. But it surprises me, and again, we've sort of gone around this before, why we talk about props and costumes, why the show doesn't really sort of really push on that. I mean, we had handles, didn't we, for one episode? And then that's a cheap, effective little thing that could be in the TARDIS the whole time, which could be just a little bit of fun. You know, it's another voice, another character. It's another prop. It's something for people to own. It's for something for people to feel fondness to. You know, different alien races, you know, where's that? Or different sort of gadgets. You know, why just the sonic screwdriver? You know, why not introduce a few more different gadgets rather than just the sonic shades? You know, it's sometimes the show feels so trapped in its lore, doesn't it? The Doctor has a sonic screwdriver. Well, there was a time where he didn't, and there was a time when he did, and then there was a time where he didn't. We don't have to have a sonic screwdriver. He can have other things too. I mean, I suppose he's got his psychic paper, but that's been going 15 years now. It's like, why are you not introducing the fun stuff which can be merchandised, or fans can create themselves, or, you know, become things and posts and articles on the internet? Why? There's none of that. Everything in that sort of way seems oddly stripped back, and I don't know why. Because that, to me, would be a really obvious way of trying to give it, you know, extra love and extra attention. And they just don't seem to do that. Handles would have been perfect. It's not like bloody Chameleon that didn't work, or even Canine that didn't work. You know, it's a head that sits on a console, can come out and wander around with them sometimes. It's an Aurak, isn't it, effectively? Why not? I just don't understand that sort of weird lack of vision. You know, as we've said before, the exotic races, you know, why have we not had a few, you know, a season where the Master is alongside the Doctor for whatever reason? You could do it. It's the Spike and the Angel, you know, it's the Negan from Walking Dead, if we're going down there. That tension, that sort of threat, and people like the Master, why not do that? Why not? Yeah, those are sort of obvious boundaries to break. And then the biggest obvious boundaries to break is to go, as Brian said at the beginning, and this is my final point, is sometimes the way to break a boundary is sometimes to sort of go back to kind of what, you know, reduce things down to its simplest. And, you know, a series of six stories, which are just them going to different places, which is, you know, which are fun. And, you know, something like that could be, you know, that could work. Could be a six where they pick up a companion at the beginning. It tries to get them back home and gets them back home at the end. And then the companion's gone. You get another series of something else. You know, again, mild difference. Just a great way to introduce new people as well. You know, self-contained series, which reintroduces the Doctor through a person like Rose, has six episodes of going around the universe and in non-connected events, comes back. You know, I don't know. I just kind of feel that sort of craziness of, like, there's so many ideas. And the only one we really got that was really amped up was the Timeless Children idea, which is, as I personally said, is fine to me. But is that it? There's so many more smaller things that you could pepper in there.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm also intending to what you both said. I still think it comes back to, what can it do differently now? Well, it can do what it did particularly well during the Hinchcliffe era and make the show about the villains.
Yeah.
Great opportunity to get some great casting for villains. People, you know, where most of the dialogue is with the villain. You have these great character actors turning up. Like they do, you know, I mentioned Midsommar Murders. You get great character actors in Midsommar Murders because they get, you know, they get a month in the south of England and they're going to die in an interesting way, or they're going to turn out to be a gibbering lunatic mass killer. And that's the nice sort of thing that actors like to do on television.
Yeah. And again, we've said a thousand times, we've said this before, doesn't always have to be a monster.
No.
Doesn't have to be a monster. I mean, you could do like two seasons, one which is a Doctor Who horror, which is six episodes, which are based around maybe some sort of established horror tropes. I know they've sort of done that before, but just sort of saying, you could do one which is on crime and have the TARDIS crash in England, and you can do six episodes which sort of homage some of the sort of British crime laws and stories. You know, you could theme a season, a short, small season of six.
Yeah.
And sometimes it could be a monster, sometimes it couldn't. Sometimes it isn't. Sometimes there's a villain, sometimes... I just kind of feel like there's just like... What frustrates me with Doctor Who is it seems so entrenched in so many of its forms that it just can't break free of them.
Yeah.
And they are so simple to break free from.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of that is also the BBC, because the BBC wants a monster in each episode.
Yeah.
And I think that is why, you know, you get this problem. You know, J&T had it famously, didn't he? J&T was like that with Cartmel. You know, you've got to have a monster in this.
Yeah.
And I don't want to have a monster on this. Oh, you've got the Candyman. Are you happy now? Madness.
Yes. So yeah, there's obviously a lot to be had along this line of discussion, and feel free to carry it on Facebook, and big hello to all the Facebook people there. And we will be back, have no fear, at some point, and we'll work something out, and we will be back, and we'll see you, or speak to you then, dear listener. Until then, it's goodbye from myself, Christian Colley, Brian Turnover, and James McLean.
Bye.
Don't speak over the outro.
My turn to speak over the outro?
Yep. Oh, it's still going. That's a long
time. We're so professional.
Yeah, absolutely.